Stuart Levine, author of Getting to Resolution and his latest work, Collaboration 2.0, talks about the benefits of collaboration, the higher heights that can be reached through collaboration, and the use of technology to aid this process. Among other comments, Stuart talks about 7 requirements for effective collaboration. It is important for lawyers to learn collaboration and to use this skill appropriately.
Stuart, it's a pleasure for me to have the opportunity to talk to you about a subject that I know is near and dear to your heart, and that's conflict resolution and collaboration with people. You started out doing only conflict resolution, and now as a proactive mechanism, I think I'd say, you're working on teaching people how to collaborate. Am I correct?
You are absolutely correct. And I remember when the light bulb went off one day, and the light bulb went off and said, yeah, the purpose of, you know, conflict resolution, especially in workplace situations, is to get people to effectively collaborate well. And why not just kind of lead with that and get people thinking about the benefits and value of effective collaboration? But you know what's really interesting? What's interesting is that was the original tact that I went to with an idea for a book to my publisher, and the publisher steered me into the arena of conflict resolution because he wasn't ready quite to understand what I was saying about collaboration.
So that's interesting. So we're going from reactive, trying to help people patch things up, to being proactive, how to create the environment where they don't have that conflict to begin with. They find ways of negotiating around the conflict.
Totally and completely. It's you know, the way I frame it and talk about it is, how can we put, quote, agreements for results in place on the front end of any project? One of the stories I always tell is there's a tagline for an old Fram oil filter commercial, and the tagline was, pay me now or pay me later.
Yeah, right.
Right, and essentially, you know, you can either do a little bit of work on the front end to make sure that you have clarity about what you're trying to accomplish together and how you're going to accomplish it, or you can kind of trip over each other as you're trying and, you know, and end up in conflict because it invariably happens when people don't have clarity at the beginning of projects.
Well, let's talk about the new world, because I know you've got a new book talking about the new internet, so to speak, and now you're talking about virtual collaboration, not just traditional or what I would call normal collaboration. What's the difference?
The technical term, Ed, and I've learned an awful lot, is face-to-face collaboration.
Ah, okay. Not Facebook, but face-to-face.
Face-to-face, or as it's often abbreviated by the folks of younger generations, F2F, okay? F2F, face-to-face.
Well, I've never heard that before, but that's, you learn something every day.
Well,
I'd be afraid to phrase it that way, though, for fear it might be interpreted as something else.
Well, I have learned a lot in the last year working on this new book, Collaboration 2.0, with a guy who's been deeply involved in technology for many years as a product analyst, and he invited me into the to this book project because of my quote expertise in the area of interpersonal communication. And when you think about it, you know, more and more, you know, including most definitely you and I in the way we work, we're all of us involved in this, quote, global economy. We're doing virtual collaboration. We're not working with the people next door or down the hall, but we're working with people all over the country, all over the world. And I certainly know that that's true for multi-office law firms and law firms that are doing transactions internationally. It wasn't that long ago I actually heard someone say, I don't care if you're a solo practitioner in a small town, you're going to be touched by issues and concerns of international law.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So why is it so critical, though, that the solos, as you say, or others, be aware of the new collaboration, the virtual collaboration?
Sure. Well, because it, and this is especially significant for lawyers, there's a body of work that was initially developed by a psychologist at UCLA, Albert Moravian, and his partner Susan Ferris, and they measured how it is that we communicate. What's the channels through which we send messages? And the interesting phenomenon that they discovered is that somewhere around 85 to 90% of, and there are different conflicting studies in this area, but suffice it to say, a huge amount of the communication that happens between people traditionally happens in a nonverbal arena. Much of it coming from the visual, you know, the impact we make just by our appearance, a lot of it coming from the tone or mood of our voice. And when we move over into the virtual world and we're doing a lot of collaboration by using text messages, we miss a whole array of bandwidth. And so it's real important to keep that in mind when you're delivering and sending messages and when you are creating and forming new teams and new collaborations.
You know, what you say is really interesting and quite critical. What we miss when we do the virtual collaboration, there is something we gain. We gain speed. We gain perhaps some ease of communication that is missing in a large group of collaborating people. But we miss that those nuances, and I think it's for that kind of issue or that reasoning that has been the reason why face-to-face, and I like that term, I'm going to start using it, face-to-face conferences are up. They're not down in the quantity and so forth, because people need that touch, if you will.
Yep, and when you think about it, though, I hear what you're saying that, you know, and fortunately, I think the technology is getting better, but we're also starting to see a whole lot of pressure in industry on the whole sustainability factor, you know, the cost of a bunch of people getting on an airplane, and the environmental cost also is just, you know, a lot of people are really starting to look at it,
mm-hmm.
and pay attention to it. But, I mean, the great example that I use, and a couple of things. Number one, if you and I are having a conversation and we're face-to-face and I've got to deliver a somewhat difficult message, I can deliver the content of the message and then, you know, kind of reach out or put a hand on your shoulder or see your immediate response and, you know, bounce back to it to soften whatever blow might be there. But it's real important that we pay attention to these things. Emoticons, those funny little face pictures that
mm-hmm.
sometimes people, you know, put on their emails. Well, when I first saw those, you know, my response was, and I'm sure most people are with me, is, you know, what is this stuff? And yet it serves a useful purpose because the touch of communication that's often communicated through a voice or a look or a glance is not present when we're using a text
right.
vehicle.
And especially if you're trying to make a joke. One of the things that I learned a long time ago when I started taking depositions was you never, ever try to make a joke in a deposition because it just doesn't read back quite the same way. And you have to really understand who it is that's going to be listening to your words as they're read back.
Sure.
It's outside of the context of where you originally made the joke. Well, Stuart, you know, I know that you like to work in principles, and I think you have a list of seven essentials to keep in mind when working remotely. What might those be?
Sure. It's interesting. I just I've done a number of programs in this area, and, you know, this is kind of original thinking in the sense that we're all stepping onto this new horizon of what it means to collaborate virtually. So the seven buckets that I've come up with to think about and be aware about on this area is, number one, you've got to become what I call a conscious communicator and a conscious leader when you're working on leading a virtual a team or taking care of a virtual project. And by conscious, I mean you really have to maintain a whole lot of awareness of the words you choose, the phrasing, and how someone could misinterpret that message on the other side just from a reading of the pure words. So number one, become a conscious communicator. Number two, in the virtual world, and some studies have revealed this, the whole notion of trust building becomes much more essential. When we are working with, you know, quote, disembodied voices, all over the globe or all over the country, when we're working with disembodied voices, it takes a little bit more effort to build trust. So it's really important to have a level of engagement and invitation to get people involved and to get them participating and to invent ways to get people involved. One of the things that I've seen is individuals who work virtually with others are starting to build kind of what I call a social network site where people can look at a picture and find out a little bit of personal information, kind of like a little Facebook site for a project team, so people who know a little bit more and have a view of the people they're working with. Keep in mind, number three, that leading in this area demands levels of creativity because there's no manual we can pull off the shelf. And by creativity, may sound strange, but the whole notion of working with a team, setting up a little social time, a virtual happy hour, if you will, or a virtual lunch where you actually, okay, we're going to hang out a little bit, you know, even though we're 1,500 miles apart and two time zones apart, we're still going to create an environment where we're just hanging out for a while.
It's interesting because I had that happen to me just today in a conference call, virtual collaboration, and one of the people had just suffered the loss of her father. Mm. And the leader of our group literally took the time to focus on the individual and say, what do you need from us?
That's beautiful, and as I said, in the virtual environment, it's more important to pay attention to that, because if the leader didn't take the time to do that, the person just would have been kind of sitting there, not brought into the group at the far end with a whole lot of preoccupation on their mind. So that's kind of what I mean by engagement and invitation, making sure that people are involved. The fourth bucket, Ed, is the whole notion of what I call honoring formality and process design. And by that I mean, you know, if we're working with people who are next door or down the hall, we can be a bit more informal about how we begin a project and some of the formal communication channels or protocols we might use. When you're working in a virtual environment, you better have a clear agreement at the beginning of the process. You better have some communication protocols about how often, who's present, and you also better have a way of moving through conflict or difficulty that's built into your process. So you need that that formality, that structure, to keep people engaged. The fifth bucket is to keep that awareness of the three V's that I mentioned earlier, the visual, vocal, and verbal components of your communication messages. You know, doing things like recognizing if you're working in a text medium, just using words, that you may want to use a little bit of your, quote, novelist-like skills and you know, create some images or create some feeling tone and make sure that that's part of your communication protocol.
What were the three V's again? Visual, vocal?
The visual, which is appearance, and appearance still has a a role to play in what our electronic communication looks like. The vocal, which is the tone or mood of your voice, and you certainly can, you know, create tone or mood in an email, and the verbal, the content of the words.
Okay.
Obviously, you know, most lawyers, heavy on the verbal. Okay? The sixth bucket is choosing the communication channel. And my co-author, you know, and colleague has got a great line which kind of says it all in this area. Never break up with your girlfriend in an email or a text message. And so there's a truth to that, okay? What's the appropriate channel for various levels of communication? For things that require kind of real-time interaction, you know, text message, even though it's immediate, doesn't do it. You want to have that voice quality. If you're having a discussion, if you're resolving a conflict, if you've got some decisions to make, you want to, and the phrase I use in this area, the higher the touch, meaning the more deep the content is, the more of an emotional component to it, the more interaction you need higher tech, meaning email's not going to do it. You need at least a telephone and perhaps a good high-quality video conference. So be aware of the channel. And the seventh bucket is recognizing cultural differences. And I use that term culture really broadly. It's age differences. As we know, we're now dealing with new folks in the workforce, millennials and the like, and people have different habits, different nationalities, people from different parts of the country, people who work in different professions or different environments. So be aware of the different cultures and the different languages that they speak.
Well, you know, you said something about going back to the communication medium for a moment. I thought you said the more emotional the issue, the more high tech that you needed. And I think I would put it a little bit differently, which is contrary to what this assertion is, but it follows the advertising line of the phone companies when they ran into trouble with voicemail. And the new tagline was high tech, high touch. And I think here what you're saying, as I would interpret it anyway, as being the more appropriate perspective would be the more emotional the issue, the more touch you need.
Right. The more, absolutely. I mean, that's what.
And that might be going back to your face to face.
Yeah. I meant more touch, and I said higher tech, and by tech, getting a little technical here, what I meant was broader bandwidth, meaning a wider channel of communication, the broadest bandwidth being face-to-face, just
mm-hmm.
as you said. So, yeah, and then thanks for clarifying that for the folks that are listening.
Okay, so if we follow your seven rules, then we're going to have a much more successful collaborative environment. If we have a more successful collaborative environment, we're going to have a more successful project conclusion. Is that where you're leading us?
Absolutely. And obviously, you know, there are other nuances to all of this. You know, the whole notion of something that I'd call my interpersonal communication toolbox, which is probably 25 little pieces that we need to be aware of in terms of more specifically in kind of a deeper dive about how we communicate and some communication tips for people. But, yeah, this is all in service of more effective work product over the long term. And interestingly enough, surveys have revealed that that communication is one of the critical tools and skills, and yet organizations often pay very little attention to it, thinking that people get this by themselves, and they just don't.
Well, as a former divorce lawyer, you're preaching to the choir. Isn't that the assertion made in every divorce case? We no longer communicate.
Yep. I come from a similar background. Not that I was totally focused in that area, but my initial mediation conflict resolution training was as a divorce mediator, and all of the models that I use around communication, I tested in that environment before I brought them to the broader organizational context. My thesis being, if they work here, they'll work anywhere.
You remind me of the cartoon I saw in the newspaper one day, where a couple, man and woman, are sitting up in their bed, each with a laptop on their lap, and one is typing out to the other something to the effect that it's a shame our laptops don't talk to each other anymore.
Well, you know, Ed, that story reminds me of a little story which I think is kind of really telling for this conversation we're having. It was probably about 7 or 8 years ago when technology is first really bubbling up, and I actually did a panel. It was a pro and con panel, whether or not one could do a successful divorce mediation in using technology. In other words, that divorce, you could mediate the divorce using purely technology. And I took the pro side of it, that it can be done. And one of the things that I realized out of that is, you know, technology is, it's just another tool. And for certain contentious divorces with intelligent people who know how to, you know, write, that buffer of technology could be a vehicle that's really helpful in that environment. And I'm talking about the situations where folks, you know, can't stand to be in the same room with each other.
Yeah, obviously. And I agree with you that technology is a tool. It's not an end unto itself. And we both know folks who view the technology as the holy grail. It is the end. It is what it's all about. But in my life, at least, that's not the case. It is a tool. Yeah. It's appropriate in certain places and not in others.
Coming back, Ed, just to punctuate that, that kind of leads full circle to the first bucket, becoming a conscious communicator, which is just, you know, very, very critical. And it also reminds me, I did a presentation probably about 4 or 5 years ago before a gathering of law firm CIOs, and every law firm CIO that made a presentation during the day said, it doesn't matter how good the technology or the fancy gadgets or tools are, if people can't communicate with each other on an interpersonal level, the tools are not going to help.
That's right. That's right. And as an avid cyclist myself, I can tell you it does not matter how light the bike is. It's the engine, i.e. the body, that determines who's the winner.
Yes, absolutely.
Stuart, I want to thank you for joining us today. Our time is up now, but I do at some future point want to get back to you and talk about your communication toolbox. Again, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure, Ed. Great to be here.
You have been listening to a LawBiz podcast. For more podcasts, please visit www.lawbiz.com/podcasts.html. Feel free to tell your friends and colleagues about LawBiz Podcasts. You may duplicate this program in part or in whole, provided that you retain appropriate attribution and copyright notices.